This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
City Limits. Brought to us by the People's Committee for Melbourne every Wednesday at 9am.
City Limits is Melbourne's only hour devoted to our urban environment.
To transport and planning and housing issues.
To privatisations and our utility services.
To building and or maintaining a sense of community. 855 on the AM band, if we can hear it through the noise and find it through the smog.
City Limits.
Okay, acres and acres of tar and cement, and it is subscriber month at 3CR.
We were just talking about that, weren't we, Kevin?
We were, Anne. So I'm Kevin Healy, and that's Anne and Maxwell, by the way. But we were saying subscriber, and if people subscribe, they become part of the team here, and we're all part of a team, and you know. We I think you must use the word we, because our listeners are as much a part of 3CR as we present. And as we know, we say this every year many times, but God, you're not going to get some of the coverage, because the coverage we're getting on other things, particularly events this week, you're going to get the real situation on 3CR.
That's right. All the programs covering it, and you do need City Limits in your life.
Yeah.
So if you want City Limits in your life, now's the time to show your appreciation and support.
And those who think, my God, that's awful, there are lots of other programs as well, let me assure you. There are really good programs as well. Okay, now a cup of tea, Anne.
A cup of tea would be lovely.
It is our energy day today, and it's second Wednesday, and we're going to be talking to someone we've spoken to a few times. We're going to be talking to Freya Leonard, who last time we spoke to her was the anti-gas person for Friends of the Earth, but she had to leave that position. And she's now doing similar work with the Australian Conservation Foundation. So we'll have Freya on talking about the upsurge in the use of fossils and all sorts of things that are happening. It's been, you know, despite the fact that we're supposed to be cutting back, as usual, we just see increasing use of fossils and damage to the planet. Now, there's Vietnam Morale from Ministry, and there's a thing with map on it, blue one and a white one.
Oh, I better have the map. I need to get oriented here.
Okay, the map. Oh, the map. The map's the blue one. Yeah, that's right. There you are. Blue map.
Thank you.
Righty-o.
That's the cup.
Now, late in the year, there was this furor about parliamentarians' expenses. And the Liberal Party was up in arms at the way the Labor Party was abusing it incredibly.
Were they what?
Well, during the break, in fact, mid-December, just not long after we had our last program last year, it came out that three of the front benchers in the Liberal Party, Ted O'Brien, Michaela Cash and Dan Tehan, charged $10,000 for travel and accommodation to attend a Liberal Party fundraiser in Sydney. Yes. Now,
I'm very annoyed about that.
Very annoyed, but it's okay. It's okay because a spokesman for O'Brien said he conducted parliamentary business during his trip to Sydney, including meetings and a public address. Senator Cash charged a total $4,247 something or other, including a flight to Sydney's 960, but a spokesperson for Cash said the purpose of a trip was to conduct parliamentary business.
I love the way they all become multitaskers all of a sudden.
Yeah, she met with representatives of the Australian Federation of Ukrainian Organisations in her capacity as Shadow Minister for Foreign Affairs. And Tehan, who represents Wannon in Western Victoria, a spokesman for Tehan said he conducted parliamentary business in Sydney, so it's all okay.
Oh, that makes sense.
No
if you're
problem.
Fundraising, you don't want to spend all your funding on fundraising, do you?
That's right. Absolutely no problem. That's it. Yeah.
I knew there would be things left over from the end of the year.
Yeah, that's one I had here last week. I didn't get round to, but there you are. Now, another one I find fascinating, and it's relative to what we're going to be talking about today to Freya. Senator Sarah Hanson-Young, and we've got nothing against the Green Senator from South Australia, but the Greens, as we know, are big on what we're going to talk about today, stopping fossil fuel expansion and opposing the planet, opposing the warming up of the planet.
Yep.
Now, She also has been questioned, but it's been deemed okay. She billed $50,000 to taxpayers to fly her husband to Canberra. Now, this is allowed because people are allowed to bring their family there for family reasons, but he happens to work in Canberra because he's a lobbyist. but nonetheless, $50,000. But the interesting part of the video I found absolutely incredible, and I suppose you can't be blamed for your partner, he's a bloke called Ben Oquist, who's her partner or husband, and he works for a lobby group called DPG Solutions. Clients include Wesfarmers, one of the big polluters, the Catholic Education, which is only pollutes kids, so that's all right, or doesn't win it. But certainly, I imagine they lobby to get more money when they shouldn't get any. But the big one is Rio Tinto, one of the big polluters of this planet. And her husband works for a mob that lobbies for Rio Tinto. Yeah. I just found that absolutely incredible.
Wow, what are their breakfast conversations like?
I don't know.
What are you up to today, honey?
That's right, yeah. I'm going up to stop pollution, dear, and he says, well, I'm going up to do it.
Oh, well, that'll be a stalemate once more.
Yeah, so I just thought that one was a little fascinating.
Good for you for ferreting that one out.
Yeah. Now, this is one you'll find pretty hard to understand because we all love Disney films and the Walt Disney life, and it's such fun, isn't it?
Sure. Disneyland. It's family values, Kevin.
Disneyland and Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and Pluto and Walt.
Talk about polluting young minds. But
Walt, who was a great believer in American way.
Yeah.
Now, in Australia, it increased its revenue last year to $1.01 billion. Oh. And profit went up as well to $63 million, but somehow or other its taxes didn't. now here's a surprise.
It's always a shock. It's always a shock when you tell me these things.
Yes, yes. Apparently, the most vast amount of royalties to the giants were transferred to the American parent company, and so you can't pay tax on that episode here anymore, can you?
No, they're not on shore, I guess, is the problem.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. So, but they do care.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Crossing the billion-dollar revenue mark is significant for the Walt Disney Company Australia, said Kylie Watson-Wheeler, Disney's local managing director.
Oh.
Our local operations are of a size and scale commensurate with being one of the largest entertainment and media companies in the country. We have a significant local footprint and deep ties to industry, but it doesn't actually come to financing the company.
No, the deep ties don't extend to...
that's right.
To being upright citizens.
And getting back to the problems of climate change.
Oh, that old thing.
Yeah, that old thing. Mm. The ACTU, which I think hasn't exactly bathed itself in glory over the dismissal of the construction unions, but nonetheless, it's now campaigning to have strict heat regulations on increasingly hot days, which is fair enough.
I saw somebody out working on a hot day and I thought, wow, where's the union?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty awful. And they point out that the industries affected particularly are construction labourers and airport ground staff out on the tarmac horticultural workers and miners. And one bloke who that the ground staff at Melbourne Airport said that on a 45-degree day on the tarmac, it's more like 60.
Mm.
And, you know, he said people were having dizzy spells and fainting and all sorts of things in those days.
Mm.
But you'll be pleased to know, despite this, the employers say this will be a disaster for the economy if we do this.
If workers are not keeling over in the heat, it'll be a disaster.
No, that seems to be the problem. Mm. Our old mate Innes Wilcox of the Industry Profits Group, you know, said it would be totally unworkable. He said it's just totally unworkable. But even though the workers say, well, it's not acceptable anymore to work in those conditions. Sadly, Innes says that it's unworkable because apparently he wants people to work and not unwork. And there you are. But anyway, the bosses are fighting back. But I would have thought, with the way that it's going in terms of the temperature and climate, it's pretty important to have a policy that means.
I can just see him wagging his finger as the temperature rises at all the plants that refuse to grow when it's 50 degrees.
Yes, that's right. One assumes,
this is just not on.
One assumes he has made these comments from an air conditioned office, of course.
Yes.
at the Australian Industry Group, there you are, and but it is a serious one, and let's hope the campaign succeeds.
Yeah, I thought it was a thing. I remember in my 20s we were working in an unair conditioned office in Queensland.
Yeah,
and it got up to 39, I think, and we all went home. 39 indoors.
Yeah, yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah, it's pretty awful, and it's getting worse, of course, because in those days the temperature wasn't as hot as it is now overall. I mean, on average, and we're going to raise with Freya later, but last year again was one of the hottest on record, and you know, every year now it's happening year after year, they're getting hotter and hotter and hotter. a mop called HealthScope, which runs or ran, depending how you look at it, a heap of private hospitals, and made lots of money, somehow ran into financial difficulty, and now it's sorting itself out. The receiver has sold off a number of the hospitals and transferred some back to the state. That's right, give it back to the state. It was losing money. And they're also, the rest are going into a charitable and non-taxpaying trust, which is all very good.
Mm-hmm.
Except even one of the economists in the Financial Review points out that the reality is a loss-making HealthScope wouldn't pay income tax. It was always, and this is a throwaway line they've thrown in, it's not us, so don't sue us. It was also a shoddy income taxpayer, to be fair. But the big benefit to a supposedly $100 million a year saving on payroll tax that would otherwise be paid to the states and used to fund public hospitals, community health, ambulance services, and everything else in their remits. Instead, that $100 million will prop up HealthScope's cash flows. By HealthScope not paying tax, we're all taking a financial hit. And he concludes by saying, the unsuspecting victim in all this is the rest of us. It's great to have HealthScope's hospitals open, but it was even better before the financial engineers took hold, and this was a good company that could afford to pay tax.
Interesting.
So there you are.
How they wrangle all that. Well, you know my take on it, don't you? The federal government should be funding it.
Well, they should.
Sending enough funding down to the states to manage their healthcare systems.
They should. They had a new one last week, a new health offer to the states. But as, you know, we've said time and again on this program that originally health Medicare was Medibank originally, then it was wiped out by Fraser, and then it came back under Hawke as a Medicare with Hayden as the minister. But Medicare, they 2% levy to provide a free universal health care for everybody, which, of course, was done great damage by Howard, who transferred a lot of that money to the private sector with health insurance. And Medibank, which was a private public, the public system originally, is now, of course, a private insurance company as well. And there's so much of the money going to prop people up in private health insurance, which should be going directly into providing health services directly. And if the 2% isn't enough, then let's just increase the levy.
That's right. Well, let's just increase the spending.
Yeah, well, increase the levy dedicated to community health and have a free public health system, which doesn't need the private sector at all.
No. And I often hear that they end up not being able to fund certain things anyway. The private sector sends certain kinds of procedures back to the public anyway.
Well, yeah, that's right. A lot of them just do cosmetic stuff, and the serious stuff ends up in the public hospital system anyway. Yeah. And we've mentioned a few times that Labor was critical of the use of consultants in the previous government. And
they were champions of the overuse of consultants.
That's right.
Oh, good on them.
And, of course, we had the the scandal with PricewaterhouseCoopers, where they leaked information they were getting on, supposedly secret information on tax, which they were then leaking to their clients, as if, you know, you think they wouldn't anyway. I mean, what, you know, as the frog said, why did the snake, why did you bite me? It said, because I'm a snake, you know. it's what they do.
You get fables on City Limits as well.
Yeah,
you get
that's
it all
right.
Here.
And... anyway, Labor began a program of cutting back on the use of consultants, and now it's been criticised heavily, of course, for having too many public servants, because it's actually hiring public servants to do what the consultants were doing and what the public servants should have been doing in the first place. But now, even now, they're backing off on that. Because there was a government inquiry, a Senate inquiry, which recommended a number of changes and even more drastic cuts to use of these people. But the government has now refused to adopt most of the recommendations.
Yeah, good on them.
It just won't do anything about it. It just keep using them, apparently. And Barbara Pocock, a Green senator, said the government's response is an absolute disgrace given the enormous time and resources Parliament had put into exposing unethical conduct. The government continues to downplay ongoing consultant scandals that show no sign of going away. Labor is failing to deal with entrenched malpractice, poor governance, structural failures and unethical practices. Dear me.
Well, I want to see a healthy and robust, say it how it is, public service. Yeah, but I guess you can always do with an overhaul, especially of your consultants.
Yeah.
Kevin, oh, I'm waiting for Kevin. He's got on to the next thing.
No, that's all right. You're right. I think they deserve it. And PricewaterhouseCoopers was supposed to have been banned for a long time, but they've been reused by the government as well. All going well, isn't it?
Yep.
Yes.
It's hard to turn that ship around. It's a giant ship. It's hard to sort of reorient it.
Yes, and also because with digital taking so many places in workplaces, unions are seeking the right to get more information from their employers about what they're up to in terms of digital and what it's going to mean for the workforce. But in New South Wales, this is a motion in New South Wales at this stage, but the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers Party wants to give employers the power to deduct and prevent copying of data from their digital systems, because that means the unions will have power and they'll be able to pass on information, and it's terrible and it's unreal, and how dare the unions want to know what's going to happen to workers. Isn't that bloody awful? Speaking of New South Wales, we haven't mentioned, but I suppose we should, the awful events this week in Sydney. And I went to the rally here. I don't know if you were there on Monday, the rally? The rally on Monday, and just as a by the by, I standing up now, my legs tend to lock, so I've got to sit down. So I sat down on the steps near where people were there, near where the speakers were, on the steps of the station. And a copper asked me to move on. They said, I want to keep this passage clear. So I said, oh, yes. So I moved a bit, and they said, no, you can't sit there. I said, well, where can I sit? He said, over there. So I sat over there, and a different passage, and another copper came up and said, you've got to move. And I said, well, no, I've been moved twice. I'm not moving. And she said, well, you've got to move. I said, no, I'm not. So she said, you're not moving. I said, no, I'm not. So that was it. And anyway, I stayed there for the rest of it.
Talk to the knees, people. Talk to the knees. They're not cooperating.
So I stayed there, but it was a great rally.
Yeah.
And wonderful speakers. I thought the two Jewish speakers, and particularly the final speaker, a Palestinian woman, her speech was replayed on the Brekkie show yesterday morning, in fact, and talking about living in Palestine as a kid and, you know, what happened to her family and herself and the treatment they got, the absolute inhumanity of the occupation. Wonderful speech. But then, of course, in Sydney we've seen what happened, and the awful thing in Sydney is that the authorities, from the Prime Minister to the Premier, wouldn't call coppers authorities, but the head of coppers, all immediately blamed the protesters for police violence. I mean, you know, it was like here last year with that that munitions exhibition here in Melbourne, the train killing exhibition, where the television clearly showed the coppers bashing the shit out of people.
People should just stop putting, as I saw someone on social media, people should stop putting their livers and their skulls in front of coppers' fists.
Coppers' fists, that's right. That's the answer to it.
That's right.
But it was just absolutely dreadful. And of course, it you know, to Albanese to think he could bring Herzog here and say this is going to be part of
a reconciliation
and all that. I mean, it just shows what a complete farce it is. at the behest of the Zionist community, and of course, as the people speaking at the rally here, and a very good article in the Financial Review by one of the members of that Jewish group, the anti-Zionist Jewish group, yesterday, pointed out that they don't represent them. But it's just these laws, and we're getting them here as well, giving the police such powers is bloody dreadful.
Mm. And of course, they could have chosen somebody else that was more more acceptable to a broader coalition of the Jewish community.
Yeah, like not invite him at all.
yeah.
I mean, I think bringing any Israeli Zionist leader to Australia is going to cause massive problems. I mean, and because the whole debate ignores the fact that 1 October 7 wasn't the starting point and the Bondi murder wasn't, although it shouldn't have happened here. There's no question of that.
Mm.
But nonetheless, the background is 70 years of the treatment of the Palestinian people. And that has to be, that's what's being ignored by so many people, not by us, but by so many people in this debate. And
I think that's what the protesters are trying to remind us of.
And it was ironic that while we're saying how wonderful, what a great man he is and bringing him here to get us all together, simultaneously in Israel, they passed yet another law to take even more land on the West Bank and make the so-called two-state solution even more impossible.
Right.
While our government keeps saying we believe in the two-state solution, nonetheless, the Israeli government says there'll never be
a two-state solution. A lot of dissonance going on, isn't there, over this whole issue? As far as the optics go,
a lot, a hell of a lot, and in fact, there was an interesting comment this week, and I thought, pity she doesn't listen to herself. Excuse me, I just got
need
a cough there.
You need a top up on your tea there.
I'll just have a sip. I'll have a sip. Yeah, get the old throat working again. Now, Penny Wong attacked the regime for 5 years of escalating violence, widespread human rights violations and severe humanitarian suffering. She said they'd seized power and abruptly ending hard-won democratic reforms and plunging the country into a violent crisis. Dozens of democratically elected politicians were detained as communications blackout befell the country. The crisis continues unabated. In 2026, an estimated 16.2 million people will require life-saving humanitarian assistance and over 3.6 million people are internally displaced. That was about the military coup in Myanmar.
Oh, okay.
But one could well, if he didn't say what it was, be, I would have thought, Israel and Palestine, Israel and Gaza. But she won't say that. In that, she won't say anything like that. She just
says...
She
can't find those stats,
No, she cannot come up with those words for that one.
Mm.
Another interesting fact, and we better go to France shortly, but another interesting fact was when the government compounded and said it would set up a royal commission into the Bondi attack, and people are now saying, well, let's expand it. I know the Indigenous community is saying, let's expand it so it looks at the bomb and the anti-racism as it affects the Indigenous Australians and is Islamophobia, which I think was a good example with the coppers in Sydney the other night with the blokes praying. At the start, Josh Frydenberg was the biggest voice attacking the former High Court judge who'd been appointed, Virginia Bell. And they were saying they wanted the right to appoint the Royal Commissioner to get the result they want rather than look at the hard facts.
Fair enough. I like to appoint my own judges too.
Well, you don't set these things up unless you know what the result's going to be,
right,
do you?
A few
of them went wrong over time. The Liberal government set up into the building industry got the employers and not the workers, which was a hell of a shock for them anyway. But Virginia Bell, but then they quietened down. I think someone said to Frydenberg, "Oh, we've got a royal commission. Let's not go too far. Let's cool it." Mm-hmm. But apparently, the reason that they opposed her was that when she was on the High Court bench, there was a case in 2017 that in which people took up similar to now. In fact, people took up a case against very, very constrained laws in Tasmania which oppose political communication and freedom of communication and right of protest, similar to what we're seeing now. And it went to the High Court, and Virginia Bell ruled on the High Court bench that people did have a right to protest and voted in favour of those who opposed the Tasmanian government, who brought the case to the High Court. And that apparently is the main reason why they are opposed, because they're upset that she actually supports the right to protest, which is interesting, isn't it?
It is interesting. I think that's a pretty good qualification, but never mind.
Yeah. So that was that. Look, we'll take a break, come back, and we'll get Freya Leonard on the line and talk about
energy.
Things. Energy.
3CR is one of a kind. We have 400 volunteers and cover an incredible array of programming content.
From special broadcast events on Invasion Day or Trans Day of Visibility to any of our 120 weekly shows, 3CR has got your radical radio listening covered.
Subscribe to 3CR at 3cr.org.au and support independent, community-owned media, free of commercial influence and government bias.
Help to keep 3CR unique by becoming a subscriber today.
Yes, there we are, subscribe. And Freya Leonard's on the line. Freya, last time we spoke to Freya, she was the anti-gas campaigner at Friends of the Earth, but she's now doing similar work on methane and fossils and gas, etc., at the Australian Conservation Foundation. Freya, before we get on to more detail, I know you'd like with us to mourn. I suppose we feel incredibly sad that since we last spoke and over the break, one of our very favourite people, Meg O'Neill, has resigned from Woodside with Profits gas company. It's pretty awful.
Oh, I mean, what an enormous gap that leaves in corporate fossil fuels world.
It's a sad blow. Let me say, for my week that was segment, it's a sad blow for satire.
Good to see at least that she's landed on her feet, though.
Yeah, she's going to BP to take over the world. She's going to, she'll be leaving Australia, I assume, because she's taking over BP worldwide.
Yes, that's right. So I'm sure this isn't the last that we get to see of our good friend Meg.
No, and in fact, BP itself, of course, a few years ago had actually tried to, patent the word green or green energy.
That's right.
It failed, unfortunately, before the courts, but it was in this mad green campaign, but now it's announced officially that it's reversing that. It's going back to business as usual, because being green was far too difficult, as Kermit the Frog said.
Well, yes. I mean, you know, it's never been easier to be green, which is, you know, the irony of this all. But good to see that the revolving door is still working and that, you know, fossil fuel shills corporate position is continuing to hold.
Yes, I knew you'd be a shattered person when you learned that, but I was certainly, and there you are. Look, this is no connection to Meg whatever, but again, we've seen last year was one of the hottest three years on record. Every year is getting that way. So in terms of trying to address the problem, we need to be doing it a bit faster, don't we?
Well, and we, you know, in many cases, Australia has continued to add to the share of energy that is, you know, drawn from renewables, and we're continuing to invest in renewables. So there is some at least good news that we can point to. But the, you know, the real problem with this that we are overlooking is that, of course, the government rhetoric, and particularly from the federal government, continues to be about smoothing the path for particularly the gas industry to continue to produce gas. We're still not monitoring our emissions. So, you know, I will remind the federal government particularly, but also, you know, our listeners, that Australia did sign on to the Global Methane Pledge in 2022. And since then, we have done pretty much exactly nothing about it. And more alarmingly than that, the emissions that we, you know, we committed through the Global Methane Pledge to reduce our methane emissions by 30% by 2030, which is now 4 years away from 1990 baseline levels. That's 4 years away. We actually don't even really monitor the amount of methane that we are putting out into the climate. Methane, of course, you know, being 84 times more polluting in the short term over a 20-year period for the climate than it is than carbon dioxide is. So it's of critical importance that we get our heads around how much methane we're emitting nationally, and then absolutely put in place robust mechanisms to capture that methane, stop it from being released into the atmosphere, and start shutting down these projects. You know, we can't. I mean, we've known for years now, ever since the International Energy Agency made it so abundantly clear about 6 years ago, that we can't afford to open a single new fossil fuel project. And yet the Australian government is still using rhetoric around, you know, continuing to allow a smooth passage for new gas projects to be approved. It just beggars belief.
And indeed, on that particular issue, and you were quoted in the article, but a couple of months ago there was an article that one of Kerry Stokes' gas fields, the Longtom gas field in Gippsland near Marlow, had been leaking methane. This is one that they've actually closed down because it became uneconomical for them. But it's been seeking gas from a leak detected in 2023. They were ordered to stop it, and yet nothing's happened. It's still leaking.
And yet here we are. No, that's right. And the same can be said for Santos in the Legendre fields. They've had rigs that have been shut down since 2011 and continue to this day to release methane. And when that was discovered, and NOPSEMA delivered an order to Santos to do something about it, Santos went, can't, too hard. And NOPSEMA went,
by the way, is the national authority.
National Offshore Petroleum Safety Environment Management Authority, yeah. And so it is their job to issue directions notices to these companies for non-compliance and for breaches. But when the companies say that they, you know, sit on their hands and go, oh, no, well, you know, no, we're actually not going to do anything about it, NOPSEMA is just like, okay, nothing to see here, you know. And so this is a problem that we see nationally. Like, you know, there's over 1,000 rigs around Australia, and we have no idea how much methane is leaking from these rigs above the ocean level, and certainly not at a subsea level. So it's really a sort of an unmonitored and unrecognised climate bomb that we are continuously every day allowing to be released into a climate that is under perilous stress. And you know, it's astonishing to me that our regulators are just not taking that a little bit more seriously.
Yeah, and well, absolutely. And I noticed that that Kerry Stokes says they may plan at some stage when it becomes economically viable to reopen this thing anyway. Which is even more amazing. Also, the Barossa up in up to be north of Australia, Santos, which was taken to court by the Tiwi Islanders, and of course the Tiwi Islanders lost the case about the impact of on their seaways. But I noticed it had a delay. The first use of it for gas, because of problems in the pipeline. Now, we don't know what they were, but it seems to me that we need a bit more detail than just there were problems in the pipeline.
Well, and again, in the absence of any genuine monitoring of emissions, how can we really know, you know, the scale of that problem? But we do know, we hear that the Barossa is starting to flow, and it's flowing into the Darwin LNG tank, which was found last year to be faulty and leaking methane. Now, we don't know that tank has been secured. We don't know that it's going to be able to retain methane now, but we do know that there's gas flowing towards it. And so the problem continues. It's really, absolutely beyond belief that the incredibly low standards that we set for ourselves as a country. We consider ourselves to be a fairly, sort of developed country, and certainly we're a comparatively wealthy country on the global stage, and we're a major exporter of fossil fuels, and yet we establish very, very low standards for ourselves in terms of managing these incredibly dangerous projects. And my concern, Kevin, and something that I think hasn't been highlighted enough, I've certainly raised it directly with NOPSEMA in relation to offshore gas projects, is particularly the projects in the north of Australia. As we see these higher heat events and the north of Australia, becomes decreasingly livable and more likely to experience days over 50 degrees, what happens to volatile methane in those really high heat events? Is it going to escape more easily? I mean, science says yes. And what does that do to the safety of workers on those platforms? And then what does it do for the climate? And all of that is being under-recognised at the moment, and certainly under-resourced. And I have grave concerns about the direction that's heading in.
Yeah. And the other side of that is that the gas use is falling anyway in Australia. People are turning to electricity more and more. So really the need for gas is decreasing at the same time as they're increasing supply.
Yes,
and mainly
that's
for,
right.
Mainly presumably for export.
Well, yes, that's right. And, to be clear, the federal government is under considerable lobbying pressure from the gas industry. And in fact, just yesterday there was an article from Australian Associated Press about the impact of Japanese gas giants' lobbying records, and these have just been recently exposed. So Japanese firms, and so we're talking about Impex, we're talking about JERA, Mitsubishi Corporation, have about $70 billion in equity invested across 13 LNG export projects, and they're lobbying hard to make sure that their financial interests are protected over the rights of the climate, over the rights of us to have a livable climate. And that influence is landing. It's landing with the federal government far more powerfully than any other lobby group, particularly, lobby groups for the climate and lobby groups for renewable industry are just not able to have the same kind of voice because they don't have the same dollars behind them. And those dollars that they have in their pockets are tax-free dollars that have come from gas that they've got for free, basically, from Australia. So it's this incredible imbalance at the moment. And I think that this is the year, Kevin, that we really need to shift that emphasis. We really need to highlight the extent to which the federal government has for so long been apparently captured by these fossil fuel interests. And we need to turn that ship around as a matter of absolute urgency. I mean, we needed to do that, decades ago. We certainly need to do that today.
Yeah. And at the same time, of course, they're paying very little tax relative to, or royalties relative to, the amount of profits they're making from what's not their property in the first place. And there's been a number of people screaming and yelling for that they time to pay for their, pay for at least pay the proper price for what they're doing, and it's been compared to Norway, which takes much more from the polluters. And a group called the Superpower Institute, I'm sure you're aware of, put up a case saying that we need to tax them much more heavily than we're taxing, which might in fact force them also then to spend more on renewables.
Well, indeed. And certainly, I mean, if for no other reason than because, you know, like, okay, so one way of framing it is that in Victoria, the Victorian government disastrously and briefly entertained the concept of putting an emergency services levy onto farmers. That those emergency services are under increasing pressure and have increasing demands on their service provision because of climate catastrophes. And so it's now got to the point where we're seeing these climate fuel disasters that are absolutely brought to us by fossil fuel industry. I mean, you know, yes, certainly agriculture plays a part, but you know, an enormous amount of methane and carbon emissions is coming out of the fossil fuel industry. We know that, and that's an industry that we can manage far more adeptly. And certainly, you know, there's an increasing argument that big polluters should be paying for the impact that they're having and paying for the financial consequences to Australians and Australian governments for the climate fueled events that are due in no small part to fossil fuel interests.
Yeah, and I mean, at the same time also, it was revealed just a week or two ago that renewables for that quarter had provided more power than the fossils. So
yes,
that
indeed.
It's actually, it's happening, yeah. And so it can happen.
Yes, that's right. We've just hit the 50% mark in terms of renewable share in Australia, and that's only going to climb. And so there is, I mean, yes, it's, you know, and we make the point that so much of the fossil fuels being sucked out of Australia are just being shipped overseas. You know, it's 80% of Australia's gas is earmarked for export, and then a further 10% is actually used for energy to prepare that gas for export. So really, in Australia, we're only using about 10% of the gas that's being pulled out. We're paying international prices in Australia. So in every way, the use of gas in Australia is beholden to gas cartels. And people are waking up to that, and that's why people are switching off gas nationally. But if everybody in Australia stopped using gas today, we'd still have a massive export problem. So we do need to start disrupting the business model that has meant that these companies can just walk away with, you know, paying very little in profit and paying very little in royalties. Like, really, I mean, amazingly low royalties in Australia. It's, you know, circa 10% to 15% compared to, you know, more like 70 to 85% in Norway, for instance, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just embarrassing, really. But more to the point, it's uneconomic for us. And how can we continue to accept the lobbying power of these companies that give so little benefit to Australia?
And, of course, we don't count the Scope 3 emissions, which are the ones that the end users get when it is exported and used. And that should be part of our footprint, but it's not. And that would certainly make us look even worse.
Yes, yes. And now we come full circle back to the failures of monitoring the real emissions in Australia. So Hale Creek Coal Mine is a really great example in Queensland. Continuously emits methane. They massively underreport the amount of methane that is coming out of their project. Independent verification has found that Hale Creek Coal Mine, so they reported that they produced 1.06 megatons of fugitive emissions, and in fact, they have been releasing between 5 to 8 times more than they've been reporting. So, and that's been found by satellite, independent verification from satellite data and flyover monitoring. So, so there are, you know, all these, so many disparities across all of these different coal and gas projects. We don't really know how much they're emitting. And the first step is for us to start genuinely monitoring how much methane and carbon dioxide is coming off these projects, and then put in place rapid and robust measures to manage that, to cap it and reuse what is coming out of these projects, and then retire, like decommission and retire coal and gas projects nationally as a matter of absolute urgency, and in such a way that they're not continuously emitting methane well past their usable life.
Be awful though to come up with something like polluter pays, I would have thought. But speaking of paying, we're told by the industry that renewables are, we can't go rush into renewables because they're so costly and our power prices will soar if we go too fast into renewables. Yet, in the in that period now where we've found that 51-point-something% of power came from renewables, electricity prices dropped dramatically. They went down to $50 a megawatt in the December quarter, 44% less than a year earlier, and 43% lower than in the previous quarter, because renewables are taken over. So it does seem to counter that argument a bit.
Absolutely. It's been found to be a complete nonsense. I mean, you know, it's like, is that the truth, or did you hear it from the gas lobby? I mean,
or read it
really,
in the Herald Sun, yeah.
Or read it in the Herald Sun, indeed. So that is just going to, you know, continue to become more obvious as renewables come more online. You know, towards the end of January, as I say, Australia sort of hit that 50%, or passed that 50% milestone for renewables production. And then there's been an additional more than $9 billion in renewable energy projects fast-tracked in the last couple of years, as reported by The Age just a couple of days ago. So yes, it's the tide is absolutely turning, and people will start to see that showing up in reduced power bills. But if we are going to rely on things like gas peaking plants, then we will see these spikes in costs for energy. And at that point, it will start to become increasingly obvious that renewables are the affordable energy source and that fossil fuels are absolutely not our friend in any way, shape or form.
Yet we're seeing coal mines around the country being extended. And, of course, we know gas is being, you know, approved all over the place, particularly in Western Australia. But,
I just want to nod again, Kevin, sorry to cut you off, but I just want to nod again to the Hale Creek coal mine, which submissions are due to the federal department, the Queue, this week. And Hale Creek coal mine has been found to be emitting 20% of the methane emissions of all of the coal projects in Australia and producing only 1% of the coal produced in Australia. And yet that is still under consideration for extension and expansion.
Yeah.
And it's not just a climate problem, of course, it's a habitat problem. They're going to be doing massive land clearing in sensitive koala habitat. They've already had surface water leakage from their retainment dams. And when water leaks from the Hale Creek coal mine, it goes straight towards the Great Barrier Reef. So the fact that this project is even under contemplation for extension and expansion is just absolutely mind-blowing, and it tells us everything that we need to know about the federal government priorities and just how radically they need to shift to a more sustainable model.
And the highly progressive Queensland government, of course, has also totally abandoned the previous government's renewable energy policy altogether.
Thrown it out the window. Yes, that's right, and same with the Northern Territory government. It's an amazing time to be alive, Kevin, particularly as we're watching data centres come on board. I mean, I would just like to say to you, to the listeners of 3CR, that I'm perfectly happy to drink 50 litres of water and turn on the air conditioning full bore with the windows open on a hot day and tell them what they want to hear, because basically that's the same result, right?
Well, in fact, as a by the by, I notice Elon Musk now says he wants to set up data centres in space, and I thought, where's he going to get the water from?
It's amazing. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
Yes, and Elon Musk's data centres to power Grok have been found to be causing incredible air pollution in Austin, and in Austin, Texas, and these the 33 gas power generators that are firing all the time just to power Grok, creating this incredibly toxic mix of airborne emissions that then flow on down to, of course, typically economically vulnerable communities and often African American neighbourhoods. Mm. And of course, you know, these same data centres that are, you know, there to service AI are coming to Victoria and are coming to other locations around Australia. So that's going to really skew the way that we're using energy. And of course, you know, demand on water resources as well in the most arid inhabited continent on Earth. That's the looming problem, I think, that we have in the energy matrix. And it's something that really needs to be tackled as a matter of urgency.
Yeah, and unfortunately the other side of that is, as usual, that both the federal and our state government here in Victoria are saying they're going to cut back on regulations to encourage these data centres to come here. So rather than discourage, they're actually encouraging.
And what for? I mean, genuinely what for? But so that we can outsource our own intelligence to a computer. And when you let AI have its head, of course, it very quickly comes to the conclusion, destroy all humans. And honestly, if you look at what we're doing to the planet, I do have a certain sympathy with that position. Yeah. Certainly humans seem to have landed at the same conclusion, you know.
Well, we're just speeding up the process, aren't we, really? Yeah.
Exactly. So all of it is just, it's a dystopian time that we live in. And with a bit of a pivot, you know, like I was up in Sydney on Monday night and was present for the Herzog rally. And I saw the best and the worst of humanity right there. And it did just feel like a microcosm of what seems to be happening across communities in terms of power dynamics with the state absolutely siding with, siding against the best interests of community, siding with the people who are doing the worst things to the planet and people, and the people on the ground standing up and saying that they won't accept that anymore. And whether it's, you know, the genocide in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank that's being perpetrated by Israel, or whether it's extensions of coal mines, whether it's, you know, expansion of AI data centres, it really is the time for us to all start letting our representatives know that they are there to represent us. They're not there to represent big business. They're not there to represent defence industries. They're not there to represent genocide or defend these businesses that are not working in our interest.
It's a
real pivotal time, I think, Kevin, and it's I'm really calling on everyone to do everything in their power, but certainly to let your MP know that you're paying attention to what they do and how they vote, and you want them to represent the best interests of a healthy climate and a livable community. It's never been, you know, it's never been a more critical time for our voices to be heard.
Yeah, but similar here. I went to the Melbourne rally on Monday, and it was, again, a great feeling, a great vibe in terms of you saw humanity in action compared to what we were opposing. And it was a great feeling. And some of the speakers, particularly the young Palestinian woman who talked about her experience there, I mentioned it earlier, was just wonderful. You know, not wonderful, but quite awful information, but yeah.
But powerful.
Yeah, quite powerful.
And energising.
Yeah, all those things, yeah. But unfortunately, back in the real world of big business, which is the real world as we know it, we're seeing them go about, you know, Westpac recently said it would continue to provide loans to the gas companies. And they say they're comfortable with the rigor the bank is applying, whatever that is. And even the big super funds, which represent workers' money, have been exposed as investing heavily in the fossil fuel industry. So, you know, it's not happening in that area, unfortunately.
No, and there's been, you know, concerted campaigns by many different organisations, not least of, you know, which is Market Forces have done some fantastic work in this regard. And the corporate team in the Australian Conservation Foundation have worked very, very strongly with investors and big banks and super funds. And it's like you nearly get them there, you know, like Westpac have been kind of traditionally the least bad in this regard, but they're still stopping short of actually withdrawing investment in fossil fuel projects. And at this point, you do have to wonder what will it take for them to realise that it's not in their interest, it's not in their customers' interest, it's not in their shareholders' interest to continue to invest in these projects, particularly in the case of coal. You know, like capital expenditure is outstripping profit now, and it's and the coal industry in Australia is about to go into a death spiral, and of course the gas industry will inevitably follow. Every dollar that's invested in these projects now is a dollar that's going to be lost to time at some point. You know, it will reach a tipping point. I'm aware that Lakes Blue Energy, you know, planning to do onshore drilling for gas in Seaspray in Gippsland, and there's no way they've tried fracking down there and they weren't able to produce a commercial quantity of gas. So there's no way now that they can't frack that they will produce anything like, you know, enough gas for it to be worth their while. But it's a Ponzi scheme, in my view. It's how it appears to me. But they've been able to convince investors to give them enough money to get out there and suck it and see, just so they can really put money in their pockets is what it looks like from where I sit.
And, of course, as usual, we presume when it hits the brick wall, the taxpayers will end up paying.
Well, exactly. That's right. And investors will lose out. So it doesn't even make economic sense at this point. The smart money is absolutely in investing in renewables. And I'd, you know, love to get into a room with some of these decision makers and just say, what seriously? What is wrong with you? like, how can you be so dumb? There is no future. There's no financial future, and certainly there's no, you know, environmentally secure future for these projects. And they really just need to be thrown off the table.
On that note, we've got to finish. We're out of time. But unfortunately, Freya, I said not unfortunate from our point of view talking to you, but I think we're going to have to do this all over again because it's not going to go away in the immediate. But let's keep trying.
Well, I'm going to do my best, and I'm unfortunately not the only one. So yeah. Lovely. Thanks so much for
well
having
done.
Me on.
Okay, thanks, Freya. Thanks for your time, and keep it up. Okay, Freya Leonard there, who, as you can tell, is quite knowledgeable on these matters. And
I learnt a few things, you know, all that methane that's escaping, even though they're not producing much for the trouble.
Yeah, it's bloody awful, isn't it? Next week's housing.
Housing next week. So we will be back next week with City Limits.